Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
I'm Donna Prisgintas.
And this is the Donalana Kitchen. We gather here once a week at the studios of Community Radio, KHOI, in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. For information, go to themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub and ask for Marcus.
Well, you'd think that we would be looking forward to spring a little bit here, but once again, we have gotten dumped on royally. We are in the throes, the absolute throes of winter.
Yeah, we'll see if that groundhog lied.
Oh, that groundhog doesn't know nothing, I don't think. Anyway, we are dealing with actually quite a bit of snow here.
And ice. That's the, ice.
Ice, snow, blizzards. Everybody has their story of how they shoveled themselves out of who knows what this weekend. It was, and the interstate was closed. They had to get out the big plows and the big everything. We were stuck in our house for all of Sunday, which was not a bad thing. Not a bad thing at all.
It was nice and quiet out.
It was quiet. It was quite the snow, and it is still out there. This was the first weekend in 28 years that the Central Iowa Barn Dance canceled its dance because right during us starting out, the band couldn't even get here.
I pictured everyone converging into Ames on snowmobiles.
We could have done that. We've had dances in bad storms before. We've closed the dance early and sent people home, but this is the first time that we just packed it in. It was that kind of weekend. So,
well, you can't say it's not beautiful.
It is beautiful. There is a man that takes pictures for the Ames Tribune, and he also posts his stuff online. Carl Kurtz. Carl Kurtz grows prairie and grows wonderful things over by St. Anthony, east of Ames, quite a ways. It's east. It's a teeny tiny town. He has a farm out there. He takes beautiful, beautiful pictures. I noticed his picture of the week this week, because you can get it online. It's entitled Blizzard. he takes wonderful pictures, so check that out. It's the magic of winter.
I don't know. After the polar vortex thing, all of this seems fairly harmless.
All right. All right. This is snow. A little late, but it's snow. So today, we're going to learn about some of the magic that goes on in trees. As the season changes from winter to spring, magic happens. Sap runs.
Well, is it running yet?
Well, not quite. sap does happen. Maple syrup does happen. So how does all of this work? Joining us today here at our kitchen table is Ben Hoff. Ben is a biologist, a botanist, a prairie ecologist, and he calls himself an Iowa enthusiast. Welcome, Ben.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I hate to say this, but does this mean we're going to have a sappy show?
Boo.
Boo hiss.
Sorry, I couldn't pass that one up. Okay, Ben, tell us about the sappy stuff.
Oh, you're sweet.
It's just begun, folks. It has just begun. Ben, you talked with us here last fall on the Donalana Kitchen about foraging herbs, mushrooms, gathering stuff in the wild. Now is the season for maple syrup. That's kind of like foraging, too. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I'd say it's like foraging. So it is a pretty old trade when it comes to the Americas. A lot of the stuff out there that you read will say that natives used to make up the product, but some of the research I've done has shown that they actually didn't make true maple syrup, but they would make a sweet drink out of the sap. And we kind of carried on that tradition and condensed that down because...
So they tapped but didn't boil.
They tapped but didn't boil. They maybe would cook meat in it or use it as a drink or, you know, warm it in vessels and use it that way, but not to make a sugary, you know, syrup like we do. That was something that we kind of created as Europeans when we came over with our, you know, our big iron kettles and that kind of stuff. But yeah, this time of year, I get to start preparing for the maple run when we get the nights that are nice and cold and the days that are nice and warm. There's a little magical thing.
How warm does it have to be in the daytime?
Well, you want your daytime temperatures above freezing, but usually above.
Yeah, we want that.
But usually about above 40 degrees is when you get sap flow. At night, you want it to get back down below freezing. And what actually happens there is the temperature change creates a pressure change inside of the tree. So we'll back up a little bit before I explain that a little more. During the spring and summer and fall, you know, you've got your maple trees. They've got their leaves out. They're making sugars. They're building, you know, tissue. They're making new branches. And come the fall, they get ready to store all that sugar so they can, you know, get ready to grow again next year.
So they sort of hibernate.
Yeah, they take all that sugar and they store it down in their roots and in these little structures called rays that are in the tree trunk.
So if you how do you spell that?
It's R-A-Y, just like the sun that we're hoping to get here soon. So if you looked at a tree that was cut, you know, like a stump of a tree, you would see annual growth rings and circles, but then you would also see these lines called rays that run from the center of the tree out towards the bark. And those are specialized cells that store some of these sugars. So what happens during this time of year when the sap is flowing, you drill a little hole into this tree.
How deep?
You go about 2 inches, 2 to 2.5 inches.
And it doesn't hurt the tree?
Well, if it hurt the tree, maple syrup wouldn't be a business.
Oh, the trees would just die, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's proper ways to do it, and there's people who are trying to industrialize it to an extent. But you know, that's a whole nother fish to fry. So you drill a hole in the tree. You can, and then what happens with this pressure change? You know, at night, like you take a balloon, you blow up a balloon, you put it outside, it shrinks down. And then during the day, that balloon would expand if you brought it back inside. So you can imagine the liquid in the tree doing the same thing and the gases in the tree doing the same thing. So it'll actually push right on out if you just make a little hole in it.
So one way to think about it is trees are kind of like pumps. They are pumping up and going down and pumping up and going down. My goodness. You mentioned Europeans coming over here and doing this maple syrup thing, which we're still doing today. Do other cultures make maple syrup?
You know, I'm not really aware of that. I imagine, you know, there's folks where maple trees exist, you know, they're going to be doing the same thing. And I'd imagine some of the folks who rely on birch trees around the world for both food and medicine would probably utilize the sap of those trees, you know, in Northern Asia and Western Europe, the Northwestern Europe. I'd imagine anywhere where a maple tree grows, you know, people would be doing this with the advent of the internet.
With the advent of the internet. Maple trees are all – there's more than one kind of maple tree, right?
Yeah, there are. There's I couldn't tell you exactly how many different kinds there are in Iowa, but – all the maple trees will produce a sugary sap that can be boiled down. So you could have your river bottom silver maples, you know, the ones that are one of the first things to flower in Iowa. You can have your box elder trees.
Maple, that's maple.
They're in the maple family. Yep.
Box elder is maple.
Box elder, yep. Oh. They make a sap as well that can be boiled down. You can do sugar maple, or what we have more likely in our area, if you're going to get into the botany, the taxonomy of it is the black maple, a close relative of the sugar.
Now, does that mean the sugar maple is called that because does it produce more than other trees or no?
Yeah, so the nice thing about sugar maples and why sugars and blacks and reds are most often used for the syrup industry is that they have a sweeter sap than the other ones. So basically, you know, a rule of thumb is that the sugars, blacks, and reds have about 40 they've got anywhere from like 1 to 7% sugar content. So that means it takes about 40 gallons of sap, which is basically sugar water and some minerals that comes out of the tree, to make 1 gallon of syrup. If you do a box elder, it's more like 60 or 70 to 1. If you do a silver maple, it can be 80 to 1.
Oh, my.
But there's going to be variation between those. You know, you may have a really sweet silver and a really, you know, really sappy sugar maple. It's
do we know what kind of environment makes a – like you mentioned, there's variations. Is it – do they use a lot of water to make these sugar, or is there a certain kind of minerals that they like to make the sugar? We don't know yet. It's pretty mysterious.
I think it's a little mysterious. I think a lot of it has to do with genetics. You know, they have developed a variety of sugar. I think it's a sugar-silver hybrid. I'm probably wrong on that one. But anyway, it's got like a 6 or 7% sugar content across the boards. When, you know, you're tapping trees out of a sugar bush, which is the name for a forest that you make maple syrup in, they can vary from 1 to 6 or 7%, you know, and folks like consistency, you know.
Well, just the idea of being able to get something from a tree in the spring is amazing. I have actually just tapped a tree and drunk the sap. It's amazing stuff. It's lovely.
Straight out, right?
Straight out. It's slightly sweet, very fresh, and because it's from outside, it's usually very cold, and it's a nice, nice thing to do. But to get from sap to syrup, I think there's quite a few steps to go through. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so you can make it as simple or as complicated as you want to. You know, for someone who's just looking to get into it, you know, all you really need is a way to make a hole in a tree, a tool like a drill bit. And then you can use a thing called a tap, which is basically a little hollow tube, or traditionally folks have used stems from elderberries or sumac or different hollow trees.
Oh, and like a straw, sort of.
Yeah.
About the diameter of a straw.
Yeah, so they're about 5/16 of an inch up to 7/16 of an inch. Sometimes people do 3/8 of an inch early in the season, you know, so pretty small. And you put that into the tree, and you can run a hose down to a bucket, or they've got some bags that you can hang on the tree, or you can hook it up to one of these fancy vacuum systems that they have around. But basically,
vacuuming the trees. Now that is a concept.
We'll get to that one in a second. There's some new research that came out about a way to farm maple syrups a little bit more industrially, but we'll wrap back around to that one. So what you do is you need a collection vessel. You collect
a bucket.
A 5-gallon bucket, preferably food safe and preferably one that didn't hold pickles before, because it will make the...
It's true. It's such a delicate flavor. You could make it go off really easily.
You know, one of the first years I did this, and I still have some pickle buckets that I use, it makes the sap smell a little bit, but when you get it boiled down, it really doesn't affect it too much with all the leaves and dirt and tree bark and bugs that fly in there throughout the season.
Fun.
You know, you strain that
kind of
stuff out.
Those are flavor enhancements.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. Oh, you mentioned the many years you've been doing. How long have you been doing this?
I guess I was trying to think of that the other day, and it's either been... 6 or 7 or 8 years. One of the three.
He's a young feller.
Yeah. Oh, very good. Very good.
The first year I started, you know, after collecting the sap that was tapped from the three or four sugar maple trees in a friend's yard, we boiled it on the stove. And that's really all you need to do is you take the maple sap and you just heat it. Maple sap.
So are you reducing it like more than 50%, right?
Yeah, much more than 50%.
Like so, down to 20% of its original volume,
so
40, or lower?
So 40 gallons of sap is 1 gallon of syrup.
Whoa!
And that's from a really high sugar content tree. That's what you're hoping for.
Right. So that's like, what, 2.5%? Pardon my math. But yeah, that's really serious reduction.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, so the components of maple sap, it's the type of sugar it is, it's fructose. And it also contains, you know, trace minerals, calcium and, you know, magnesium and these different things. And as you boil the sap, what happens is the water evaporates, and then the sugars and these other minerals in there concentrate. So you get a sweet, sticky syrup that comes out, but you also get this precipitate. You get this this stuff called nitre that comes out of it, and it's like a solid, sandy, gritty kind of material.
Are those minerals? Or
yeah, something? They're minerals. They're not bad for you. You know, they're a friend of mine likes to take it and spread it on toast. It has a nice little grit to it.
I bet it's good for you.
Yeah, I'd say it is. It's used in some beauty products, I know. You know, I guess any kind of process that makes a lot of excess of something that isn't as valuable, we're going to try to find a way to make it valuable. So usually when you get it at the store, you know, it's nice and clear. So they filter.
Oh, that's been, strained off.
It's been strained off. Yep. So you reduce that all the way down. And the way you know it's getting close to being done is that the boil changes. When you boil water, it's got really big bubbles. But as sugar content increases, those bubbles get really, really, really small. And if you were to take that off of the heat with those nice, really small bubbles on it, those bubbles would stick around for a long time too. So maybe 20 or 30 seconds, you would still have what appears to be boiling syrup. And that you can know if it's done that way. You can also take a thermometer and you can stick the thermometer in there.
Like a candy.
Yep, because water boils at about 212 degrees depending on your elevation. But as the sugar content increases, the boiling temperature also increases. So you reduce it down till it gets to be about 60% sugar, which equates to 7.4 degrees above boiling. So at our elevation, it would be about 219.4 degrees would be legal maple syrup if you're going to be, New York or Vermont standards, for that kind of stuff. And also that's important for preserving the product too. And if you go any higher than that, you can get into all different kinds of different things like making maple candy, making maple sugar, which I forgot to mention earlier was one of the first uses of maple syrup. When the Europeans came over, they didn't want to Northerners didn't want to buy sugar cane from Southerners. So they had their own product they could make themselves. And there was a pretty big trade in it for quite a while.
So maple sugar is just boiling it down even more.
Even more, even more. Yep. And then you have to.
Does it take some dehydration to get it to the sugar stage?
I've only researched it a little bit, but I think you bring it up to like 250 degrees.
Oh my.
And you have to stir and stir and stir, and then you put it in an ice bath. And then you have to stir and stir and stir and stir. And as you just keep stirring, it'll just magically turn into sugar. I'm no alchemist. But
well, no wonder it's so expensive to buy.
We should give it a try here this season.
I have a question. I don't know that you know the answer. But so when one takes the sap right out of the tree and it has all of its minerals and live tree enzymes and all of that sort of thing, it strikes me as one of those, you know how in the spring all kinds of things pop up that we call spring tonics, like the little early,
the dandelion leaves.
Yes, and the motherwort and the – so do you have any idea about the nutritional content of the sap before it's boiled?
Yeah, so it's primarily sucrose, so a longer chain sugar. It's more stable than glucose and fructose. It's harder for bacteria to break it down. But then it's just quite a few other minerals in there. I said a few of them earlier. But I'm.
What do you think about enzymes before you boil it?
You know, I'm really not too sure. I know that the syrup tastes really good, and I have a lot of fun making that part. But I couldn't tell you. I'd be interested, though.
Might be one of those things that nobody's ever tested or thought about. But
who knows? So why do you do this? This sounds like a lot of work, Ben. Why do you do this?
It's a problem, really.
It's a sport.
Yeah. I once heard that there was a person who made money making maple syrup, but I've never met them. Especially on the hobby scale, so I'm tapping. I've made my operation larger every year for the last 7 or 8 years. I started off with 3 trees, and last year I did about 30, and this year I hope to do 50 to 70 trees.
Oh, dear, it sounds like it's contagious.
It is.
It's one of those things where, oh, this could be improved. And, you know, I like my MO is really leveraging resources. So if I get any kind of profit or have any kind of resources available, I might as well funnel them back into the things I'm passionate about. And
what does that mean? Buy more equipment?
Buy more equipment.
Right.
And spend more time doing the things that I'd rather be doing.
Yes, that's good. So you are kind of on a small scale, but growing. You mentioned there's big maple business, not just collecting sap in buckets. You mentioned there was even a Iowa maple business.
Yeah. So Great River Maple, they operate out of northeast Iowa. I think their headquarters may be in Decorah. I may be wrong on that one. Sorry, Great River Maple fans out there. But their product is available pretty much across the state. And we've got a really nice population of sugar and black maples along the Mississippi River corridor up there, and they produce a lot of syrup. You can find those guys at the Varied Industries building on the upper floor at the Iowa State Fair, and they've got all kinds of good samples and maple cream and different types of products you can go ahead and try.
And are they the kind of a business that has moved beyond buckets and they're doing things with different technology?
Yeah, so they use vacuum systems to move their sap around. So, just like the pressure change makes the sap come out of the tree when you drill a hole, if you provide just a little bit of suction on that tube, you can increase the sap flow that comes out of these trees. If you've ever driven by one of these operations or seen an industrial, maple syrup operation, they've got, basically miles of tubing that run through these forests.
I've seen them in Vermont. They're kind of funny because you're out, in the summertime taking a scenic tour through the woods, and all of a sudden you see all of these trees. It kind of looks like they're tied together, cords, and you go, it took me a while to think, oh, right, it's a permanent system that they put in for catching the maple syrup.
So they pull the taps out every year. They'll replace those. And, every 5 or 3 or 10 years, depending on the tubing, they'll replace all that too. But, yeah, I imagine trying to run all of that every year would be quite the headache.
I'm imagining the deer flying through the woods and tripping over them.
Oh, yeah, branches falling down during storms and that kind of thing, In our infinite wisdom, we try to make things simpler, and a lot of times we do, but we just add new kinds of problems that may be easier or more difficult to fix.
Goodness.
There is also another method that has been developed recently, and that one is more of an industrial scale, larger than, wild forests of maple trees, and that's people actually planting saplings of trees, letting them grow for a few years, and then coppicing them, which means just cutting them off at the stump and hooking up a vacuum to the stump of these small trees.
Oh, you're kidding. That works?
That works, and they can get pretty high sugar content, sap yield out of these young trees. And, I imagine there's a process where the first year you don't take that much or what have you, but they'll resprout, and it basically turns into these multiple stemmed, tree trunks, and you can hack off several of the aerial portions and hook up vacuums to the entire top of the stump. And, imagine.
This does not sound pretty, though.
Donna, you want pretty?
I want a woods to be a woods.
I appreciate that, that there's a definite philosophy there. But there's also, at the same time, if you're working on smaller scales or for, someone who's trying to diversify, a farm and not have a place that, you could put these in rows with chestnuts or hazelnuts or elderberries, or you could graze them as well. And I imagine there's a lot of ways you could incorporate it. We don't have to jump to the – I don't know. I love the
it's
purist –
It's not the worst thing on the planet. Okay.
I love the purist mentality of, you're snowshoeing at the beginning of the season through the knee-deep snow.
I'm all for keeping it artisanal, like I keep thinking of it. It's one product that we haven't kind of – industrialized, but apparently I'm wrong.
Yeah, and you know, I'm only 30 years old, but I'm getting to the point where I don't want to be carrying 100 buckets a day. You know, 5 gallon buckets weighing 40 pounds each if they're full. You know, that's tough on the old back.
So. Oh, they must have mechanized that part too.
Well, the vacuum lines come in.
That's right. And actually, it's at the time of the year when slogging through picturesque forests full of sloppy snow, it looks nice, but carrying those buckets are kind of...
Hey, you don't have to go to the gym when you do your practice.
There
you
go.
I mean, really.
There you go. This is KHOI. This is Tasty Radio. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We are back. We're talking about sweet, sweet things today and the magic of what happens in the spring in a forest. Sap starts to run, and people with lots of energy like to go out and collect the sap and make maple syrup. We are here with Ben Hosh, and he's talking about maple syrup, how that happens, and Ben being Ben, he brought in some samples, and Donna brought some stuff, too. We all kind of brought things. So, Ben,
Maple syrupy things.
Tell us what you brought, Ben.
I brought a little selection of some syrups I made last year and then some products I made from the syrups.
We got our tasting spoons ready.
And I've got our tasting cups ready.
Oh, cups. Whoa. Uh-oh.
So, woo-hoo. I've got an early season maple syrup, which... is a nice clear color, and that clear color is usually due to a low bacteria counts in the sap. Those bacteria will break down that sucrose into glucose and fructose, which when boiled, there's more of that Maillard reaction and more of that caramelization that happens. Mm-hmm. So the early season stuff, when it's nice and cold outside, is nice and clear.
Is that what makes your grade A maple syrup, is the earlier season?
It's the earlier season, and also depending on how fast you can reduce your maple syrup, because the less of that Maillard reaction, the less of that caramelization that happens, you know, the not as dark and not as intense of a flavor it's going to be.
And okay, so is this Iowa, this one, or where's this one from?
Oh, that's really good.
Here we go.
This one is from last year when I lived in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin.
That's got a little smoke from the fire. You must have cooked that outside, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's the artisanal purist in me that will never get away from the wood fire. So this stuff came from, the town of Prairie du Chien where I lived last year. It's right across from Iowa. The sun sets on Iowa every year, night.
You should taste Lana's at the same time.
Speaking of dark and light, occasionally, we don't do it every year, but on my farm, I do maple syrup in a small batch sort of way. And my batch was from late last year, and
That is darker. Mm.
And like Ben says,
has it's almost a molasses in the good way kind of flavor.
Oh, yeah. It's darker. And, yes, there. Mm-hmm. It's because, you know, we just didn't get right on our horse and do it right away. So it's a little later in the season. So there's your darker syrup.
Mm. Might as well just try another darker one just for
Ben's
fun.
Got a dark one, too. So what's this one?
This is more maple syrup, just a late season from one of my batches. And you can see in the
Look
bottom
at the
there.
The sugar in the
that's,
bottom.
It's oh, the yeah. sugar sand.
Now, Lana, was yours cooked inside or outside?
Hmm. I did that on a camp stove outside.
Okay,
on,
but no
on the
sun,
deck,
no fire, right?
On the deck. No, I want to make a mention on, yes, you can
oh, my
do
goodness.
It. On your stove in the kitchen.
Oh,
but you're
yeah.
going to be boiling down a whole. Be prepared to caramelize your kitchen walls if you do that.
It's very dangerous.
Yeah. So the idea of doing it on like a camp stove outside or even better on a wood fire outside. There's a reason.
This one from Ben, that's a darker one from outside, also has. So you're hitting those yes. lower right. notes. It's darker. But it's got the smoke in it,
mm-hmm.
too, from the wood. Mm-hmm. This is really
And that's one thing I really amazing. Like about it, too. You know, some folks in seasons past, you know, as I've made a more efficient process, I've built different pans to reduce faster. They've mm-hmm. been exposed to less smoke. You know, the smoke content has definitely gone down. But that's something I really don't want to get away from.
You don't
from.
Want to lose it. And does it matter what kind of wood? Are you burning maple wood on the maple syrup fire? I mean, does it matter?
The hotter it'll burn, the better. Mm-hmm. You know, so oak, hickory, mulberry,
hard
elm,
woods.
You know,
okay.
that stuff will be great. If you can put a little squirrel cage fan in there to get blowing on that fire, too.
Oh, I
it'll
thought you were going to be roasting a squirrel. We got lots of squirrels in the woods, too.
Okay, so yeah. if we're talking about cooking meat, though, while we're making maple syrup, one thing that old-timers used to do, or at least one of those things that people say old-timers used to do, was hang a strip of bacon above the maple syrup pan. So as it would heat, it would drip the fat into the maple syrup, and it would act as a defoaming agent.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
You know, one way I can also do that, although the batches wouldn't be my vegetarian maple syrup that I usually make. You go ahead and you throw a dozen brats in there with the boiling sap and let them hang out for an hour and throw them on the fire afterwards, and they're really nice and tasty.
Oh, I can't. My heart, I want one. Oh, my goodness.
This sounds like a nice
wow.
spring gathering. This is good. Oh, that's a good idea because this is if you are doing it outside and moving firewood around, the idea of asking your friends and neighbors in, that's not a bad thing. It can be a group activity.
Well, and I think, this is Lana's one. Okay. I think that you should put that story to the test this year and let us know.
Do the bacon strip?
No, the brats.
Oh, yeah.
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 And
oh, that happens
fact,
every
you
year.
You can invite Lana and I and we'll, oh, so you have done it.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Oh.
That's a tradition for sure.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
So we've got one final syrup here. This one is river birch. So this one
okay.
is super, super dark. I say it's like the aged balsamic vinegars.
Oh, wow.
Of syrups.
Oh, my goodness.
How would you describe that?
Well, here's what I brought. And I found that because I had a little tasting of two different. They
this,
are
this. It's sharp.
High. It's high and sharp. Yeah,
high.
It's kind of bitter. It's a little
bitter,
like coppery and dark and.
Oh, yeah. Goodness. So, but taste this. So this is from New York State. One is a. The first one. Here's what you want to taste now is the birch maple, and you'll see. I mean, so apparently he took birch trees. But he mixed it with a very light maple syrup. So you taste it and you go, oh, it's maple syrup. But it's got that high note from the birch that we were just talking about. Taste this one, Lana. See what you think.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Now follow that with his maple walnut.
Ooh, that's...
Yeah.
I love walnut
yeah.
syrup.
I've never had walnut syrup.
So this is a product they're trying to make commercially... And I wish I knew the brand name, but I don't.
You know, I wish it is really good.
Yeah.
I wish that – I love the idea of blending them.
Yeah.
But I think the purist in me says keep them separate.
Oh, I think so too. But this is they're trying to market. It's obviously a smallish group of farmers or something that has a big woods. So they're tapping maple because it's from Upper New York State.
Yep.
And they've probably went, oh, well, we could be tapping the, while we're tapping the maples, we could be tapping the walnut, we could be tapping the birch. And then they're making a commercial product out of it.
Yeah.
So people are ready for different flavors of maple, but I don't know. Can you buy straight? This is the birch, right?
It's the birch, yep.
Can you buy it straight?
You can, yep. You can buy straight birch. If you find the right local person, you can buy straight walnut or
Is there anybody producing it commercially, though?
I highly doubt it. Yeah. I'm going to be tapping another species, sycamore, this year. I'm really excited about.
And sycamore can be tapped?
Ames has got a lot of sycamores.
Yes, we do, and they are beautiful.
And
we love our sycamores.
I've never met anyone who has had the sap, had the syrup. The books say that you can do it, but the syrup is supposed to be kind of butterscotchy flavored.
Ooh.
So, I'm kind of excited about that one.
Now, Ben, do all of these trees, run at the same time, or do they wake up in the spring at different times?
They'll wake up at different times. Some of them will overlap. Maples and walnuts will kind of go around the same time. Birches are...
How about black walnuts? We have a lot.
Yeah, black walnuts. Yep, it's great.
Oh, we have plenty of those.
Yeah. It's, side by side, I had a blind taste test of four different types of syrup last year, and I picked black walnut over maple as a favorite, actually.
For goodness sake. I suppose that's one of those that you need 300 buckets to make one gallon.
Actually, it's pretty efficient.
Oh, really?
Yeah, walnut's pretty efficient. If I remember right, it's about 60 gallons to one, which is not too bad. The birch, on the other hand, is about 80 to 120 gallons to one. A friend of mine who made it 3 or 4 years ago, his number was 116 gallons to one.
Just it's a very delicate stuff.
Well, but the nice thing about it is that the flow happens after the maple syrup season. So about the last 2 weeks of sap flow for maples, the birch start up, and it continues for about 2 weeks afterwards. So someone like me who's investing in this, these materials to boil, I can pull my taps out of the maple trees and go chase down birches for the next 2 weeks.
And you told me earlier that some chefs in some restaurants have kind of got a taste for this river birch maples, and it's kind of like worth your time if you can get some to them.
Yeah, definitely. So I mean, being a product that requires three times the work, it's three times the price, and with this unique flavor that it has, chefs like using it as like a glaze on deep fire roasted vegetables or, meats. I know in places in northwestern Europe where they have a culture of making
birch, right?
Yeah. They put it on ice cream. But you don't want to have too much of this stuff. From what I've read, it can be a bit of a laxative. So,
well, that's good because it's very precious anyway. So.
Right. If I used it as abundantly as I did Hershey's chocolate on a bowl of vanilla ice cream, I'd be in trouble.
So read the warning labels, folks. This is important here. Good.
It's cleansing.
You also made something out of.
Oh, yeah.
You've taken it to the next level.
I have.
What is this? What else do you have in those little jars over there?
So towards the end of the season, the sap quality and syrup quality goes down a little bit. It can get some off flavors. And, when the buds start to break and, the enzymes in the trees change, I don't want to throw that stuff out the last run of the year. So I take it and I reduce it down to where it's almost syrup but not quite syrup. And then I add a little bit of buckwheat honey, and then I throw it in a carboy, and I ferment it with some yeast. And the fancy name for maple syrup mead is acerglen, acer being the Latin genus for maple.
A-C-E-R-G-L-E-N?
G-L-Y-N.
G-L-Y-N.
And I think G-L-Y is some kind of, Greek or Latin base for sugar. But anyway, I let it sit for 6 or 8 months, and then about – you know, maple syrup time, I go to deciding if it's any good. And I usually back sweeten it with a little bit of maple syrup. And then, you know, you can bottle it up or just keep it in a jug and pass it around.
Any idea what kind of alcohol percentage you're getting from it?
This is about 13% alcohol.
Ooh, like a good deep bottle of red wine then.
My goodness. Who would have thought? Mead. Maple syrup mead.
We'll pass this little one around. I sweetened it up this morning. It's got a little bit of a bite to it, but you know.
Let's see.
Holy cow.
Oh. Now what happens if you stick a shot of brandy or whiskey in this?
I imagine it would taste even better. It's a little one of those little sippers, you know.
Mm-hmm. My goodness.
It's not sweet at all, so it's all converted into alcohol, all those sugars.
And I even added about a teaspoon of maple syrup to this jar this morning, so the stuff straight out is even more dry.
So we're talking about a lot of fine things from trees here.
You know, I got a friend who brews, and I was asking him advice on making maple syrup mead, and all he said was, don't do it.
Well, that never stops.
Well, because it's an expensive product, you know, to make,
right,
I guess.
Unless
I've got it
right.
around, so it's an exception. But then he also said, well, what's left after you after you ferment all the sugar out of maple syrup? It just tastes like the inside of a tree.
Well, but that in itself sounds a little enchanting,
kind of comical,
right?
Yeah.
Maple syrup.
And I also made another one here. We can get to
We're
that
gonna
one.
We're going to drink on air.
Bit.
Here we go.
Yeah, Ben brought in these wonderful little tin cups, just
the kind
of thing for hanging out around your maple syrup fire.
So these little tin cups come mostly in use during the boiling times when I have gatherings.
And they're like little dipper taster cups, huh?
They are. So you dip some sweetened, hot, boiling hot sap, you know, out of the boilers, and then you add a little bit of brandy to it. And
I tell you what, where the brandy comes in.
That's a nice little cocktail for.
Okay, so it's not really just for tasting; it's part of the communal process.
Oh,
right?
It is. Yeah, the syrup doesn't get made as well unless you have the proper outlook on life.
It's true, you know, and you're around, if you're doing this outside this time of year, it can be a little nippy yet. So, yeah, I think.
Okay, now we're drinking a second libation.
Okay,
what is
so
it?
So, this is the fancy name here. It's a Betulaglen. Betula being the Latin genus for birch, but it's a birch mead.
Oh, now so, this I like better. It's smoother. So, something or other. I don't know, Donna. Mm-hmm. You have food.
No. I would go with smoother on this one.
And it also has a medicinal mushroom in it that grows on birch trees.
Okay, that's why it's,
called chaga.
Okay, so that's why this has a fuller flavor than the first one.
Yeah.
That mushroom is kind of.
Yeah, chaga really doesn't taste like a whole lot if you have it on its own.
There's something in there.
This is the river birch, and I mean I think this would be amazing in a beer or in any kind of cocktails. Really, this.
So many nice things you can do with it.
Right, you should take this out to alluvial.
The sugar stuff.
I'd like to work with those.
Yeah,
guys,
they
if they're
play
listening.
Around with stuff like this out of the woods.
They've got big things
and
here.
Big ideas.
Oh, big things! Let's take a little break here and talk, and come back and talk about your latest business model. But this is KHOI, and this is Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more at khoifm.org. Welcome back. We're talking maple syrup. We have been tasting here, folks. We were just smacking our lips. We've been tasting birch and maple and different kinds of maple. And Ben makes mead out of maple syrup. What a nice thing to do. And, oh, thank you for sharing that with us. Ben, talk about your business model. You don't have, like, a huge all-in-one-place sugar bush, or how do you find access to trees?
Yeah, I guess I've been kind of a transient the last, you know, 6 or 8 years through this endeavor.
A woodsman tramp, oh boy.
Yeah, you know, I spent the last 4 months hitchhiking around the country from West Virginia to California and up to Washington and back. And one of the last things I bought before I left was a hand crank ice cream machine. So, you know, there's kind of a disconnect there between some of the things that I do and the things I aspire to do. But anyway, so I figure out how to make it work. So every town I show up to wherever I'm living, I loosely call my company, you know, or just me and my friends, Front Yard Sugar. So I drive around this time of year, and I'm always scoping, you know, sugar maple trees or black maple trees or Norway maples or silvers and those autumn blaze hybrids. And, you know, I am keeping an eye out for neighborhoods that have a large abundance of them, and keeping an eye out for folks outside. And I usually just drive up to houses and knock on doors and say, hey, my name is Ben. I live here in town, and I would like to tap your maple tree. Would you be interested in trading me sap for a jar of syrup? And maybe at the end of the year, you can come to a gathering and see how it's made. And I usually have pretty good luck. You know, I've only been
turned... Who could resist an invitation like that?
I've only been turned down by two individuals, you know, in the last 7 or 8 years. So folks are generally really excited about
it. I have a linden tree. Can you tap a linden tree?
You cannot. I'm
okay.
Sorry. But if the branches are close to the ground, I'll come and collect flowers from it this spring. And
I have a really, really big one. The only way to get the flowers is to probably spread, you know, a blanket or something, a sheet
Ooh.
On the ground and let them drop.
Okay.
And you can do that, but they do... It's only a few days where they just all really drop.
Okay, that's
but
interesting.
But it smells divine.
Yeah.
Linden.
So yeah, I go around and knock on people's doors, and they're usually good about, you know, letting me tap some of their trees. And, you know, if they've got kids or they're curious about the process, you know, we'll set a time, you know, for me to show up and teach the kids how to do it, or, you know, if they want to get involved in the operation somehow, I'll generally try to make that happen. So I guess this will be my call out to the city of Ames. If you do have or think you have a sugar maple, a black maple, or kin, or sycamore in your yard, feel free to send me an email. My email is bhoksch@alumni.uni.edu. And I'd be happy to come out and check out your trees, and you'd get yourself a little jar of syrup for the season. So
that sounds like quite a good deal. I don't think I have a maple tree big enough, but
maybe someone in your
how big does the tree have to be to make this worth your while?
Generally, 8 to 10 inches is the smallest diameter that you want to tap, and then as they get bigger, you can put in more taps. So what I do is this year I'm, you know, increasing production a little bit. So I've been building a trailer with a friend of mine, and I've got a water tank on the back with a pump. And I'd be driving around and pulling up to your house. And every day I'd be gathering the bucket and filling up my tank. And, you know, you would get your jar of syrup out of the deal.
That's true. You mean you'd gather something from a tree every day?
Every day, yeah. If the sap is flowing, you know, I would be out there every day and filling. You know, during peak flow towards the end of the season, some trees will produce up to 5 or 6 gallons of sap in a day.
Oof, that's a lot.
That's a lot of boiling, that's for sure.
And also, that's a lot of carrying of... A 5 gallon bucket full of stuff is heavy. So the idea that you have a pump
liquid,
system,
5 gallons of liquid.
A pump system sounds like a really good thing.
No doubt.
Very good. So how long – you said there's this magic time, and you can't really mark it on the calendar that it's going to happen. You just have to kind of wait for – again, you said it has to be above freezing during the day and below freezing at night.
Yeah. So years past, you know, the latest I tapped, I think I was March 3rd, and I was living in Cedar Falls at the time. Even the last 2 years up in Wisconsin, you know, I started earlier than that. So I think this is going to be the latest season for it that I've been a part of it so far. And you just kind of watch the forecast, you know. Once those warm days start showing up, you need about three or four of them for sap to really start going. And I like to tap, based on some of the research I've been doing, I now want to tap a little bit later in the season, because if you tap really early, the trees can get this little bacterial contamination in the holes, and it'll clog up those little ray cells, and the healing process of the tree will start to occur, and your sap flow can decrease a lot towards the peak flow at the end of the season. So, you know, some folks will catch that January or February thaw, but, you know, towards the end, they'd probably be missing a little bit.
The idea, and just think, we don't have to think about maple trees as kind of this Vermont thing, or even as this northeast Iowa thing where there's a whole bunch of trees in a woods. There, we live among trees all the time. So Ben could come around and he could actually probably tell you which ones in your yard are a maple tree. It's hard to tell this time of year. But trees are with us right now. It's kind of nice to get to know them.
Yeah. So, you know, I teach about foraging and wild foods, and, you know, people can often be overwhelmed by some of the stuff. Where do I start? How do I go about, you know, learning about all of these things that you apparently know so much about? I would recommend walking outside your front door and getting to know what that tree is in your front yard. If you don't know the name of that tree, if you don't know the name of a bug that likes to eat it, and if you don't know what the fruit or the flower of that tree looks like, get to know that.
It's like meeting your neighbors, you know?
Yeah. We don't talk to our neighbors much anymore either.
Oh, we do.
We should.
We do.
Very good.
Yeah, that's, you know, one reason I really like the approach of Front Yard Sugar is that it brings all these people together, and you know, we're all connected by something.
You know, the city of Ames finally hired their own arborist. You might want to chat him up. Apparently, he's a very nice guy.
Hey, good deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, there might be somebody to come and introduce you to your tree too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hi. Very nice. Give us that contact information again, Ben, and
My email is BHOKS, as in school, CH, at alumni.uni.edu.
There you go.
Yeah. So we've been talking to Ben today. He's a botanist, a prairie ecologist, and you can surely tell he's an Iowa enthusiast. He's an enthusiast wherever he goes because he knows how to talk to all the natural stuff around us. Thank you for being with us today, Ben.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me.
Good. I want to mention we have a little upcoming thing for the Mustard Seed Farm. Mustard Seed Farm is having a fundraiser this Saturday. Go to mustardseedfarm.org to find out more stuff.
Yeah, I think it's going to include some lovely home-cooked food.
It usually does.
Mm-hmm.
We had Mustard Seed Farm on a past show talking about growing things just besides food, growing community, growing love, all that sort of thing. You can find out more about the Donalana Kitchen by going to khoifm.org. Thank you for being with us today. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We'll go out with some cold music. It's cold weather. About the music, this is music from a CD called Northern Lights, music from on top of the world. There was a collection of various artists from Scandinavia. And this one is called Hildring. I don't know why it's called Hildring, but it's a cold sort of thing. You also heard music today by Bob Black, a fine Iowa banjo player over in eastern Iowa. You heard Snake and the Grapevine and Pinkney's Jig, original banjo tunes there by Bob Black. You can listen to the Donalana Kitchen Show every day, Tuesday at noon. We repeat it at 7 p.m. or anytime on your device. You can go to khoifm.org, download, listen to past shows, support this fine radio station. This is community radio. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.